When you're talking about the Philippines, that begins in 1898. And that's 8 years after Wounded Knee and that mass grave that was photographed when they were dumping the bodies of the 350 Lakota old men, women and children, children that had been chased down in the snow 3 miles, coaxed into coming out and then beaten to death with rifle butts because they didn't want to waste the bullets, having cut the bulk of the people apart with Hotchkiss guns, unarmed and dismounted, immobilized, sitting duck targets, fired on from high ground by troops who got 30 medals of honor for this massacre. Yeah, they actually were awarded medals of honor for butchering women and children and dumping the bodies into a slit trench where they're still in that mass grave to this very day. That was photographed. You take the photographs of them dumping those bodies of those Lakotas into that trench and you put them up against pictures of Einsatz Group and doing their operations in Eastern Europe, shooting Jews in the back of the head and dumping their bodies into anti-tank ditches, and people get confused as which image is which. Yeah, these are separated in time. That was a long time before Hitler. I'll tell you what, Hitler came to power in 1932. Wounded Knee was in 1890. 42 is not a very long number of, or a very great number of years. I'm a little older than that. I mean, it would be within the span of my lifetime. Those are contemporaneous events, and he learned from what was done here what it was he was going to do there, and said so. No reason for him to lie about it. These are in the early days. He knew what he was basing his model on. Did he have it right? Did he have it wrong? Well, hell, I think he probably knew more about American history than most Americans do. You read his books, it suggests that he was a student of it, and most Americans aren't. In fact, most Americans aren't much students of anything. Most Americans can't remember anything longer than 15 minutes. And part of the reason for that is it's continuously fragmented in the way I was talking about. And when you do hear something, it's a runaway bride and who killed JonBenet Ramsey and should Scott Peterson get the death penalty and who really gives a good goddamn anyway. But once you're in that Indian massacre there, at Wounded Knee, and that actually wasn't the last of the Indian wars. I mean, the U.S. had Marines down in Mexico put down a Yaqui attempt to establish a free state in 1914. And that's simply a fact. And the fact that somebody drew this funny little line that Arnold Schwarzenegger wants to defend with your lives across the Sonora Desert doesn't alter the fact that those are Indians down there, and that's U.S. Indian policy when it's projected abroad just the same as when it does here, because Indians are other countries, and it was always abroad when they projected that kind of military power against us. They don't teach you. Well, they're telling you to uphold the Constitution, what the Constitution actually says, does it? Anybody out there, anybody, faculty, student, community member, good red, white, and blue-blooded American Republican, want to tell me what the 10th section of the first article of the Constitution says? Quick. Y'all ready to go die or kill other people? To defend the damn thing, you ought to know what it says. Fire away back there. We got a volunteer. I like volunteers. Airborne. You're going to be in the Army tomorrow morning. Right, you're right. You're reading it. What, do you carry the Constitution around with you? Good for you, man. You take it seriously. Y'all ought to do that. They have pocket editions. You can actually explain the law to the cops when they start to enforce it on you, okay? Real handy thing to have, Constitution of the United States. 10th article, or 10th section of the first article says that in order for the federal government, and that's the only entity in the United States can enter into a treaty relation, in order for it to lawfully enter into a treaty relation, the other party has to be a sovereign entity on same footing as itself. It can't enter into treaties with states. It can't enter into treaties with provinces and counties and municipalities, boards of regent, PTA groups, or anything else other than another sovereign nation. Note, it cannot, in effect, enter into treaties with subparts of itself. Think about that next time you want to talk about American Indians with treaties being just another part of the United States, and they ought to get over and get used to it. That's an illegal statement. It's contrary to the Constitution itself. Of course, your judges don't understand that, so it might be on you to educate them. You being non-Indians, it's your Constitution. We entered into compacts with you. just thought I would demonstrate my conservative credentials, because I'm way more conservative. Everything I talk about is based on law. I'm way more conservative than those people out there. And that's a fact. But you're going back from Wounded Knee to the Marias River, to the Washita River, to the Sapa Creek, to the Slim Buttes, to the Sand Creek, to the Horseshoe Bend, to the Tallahassee River. You're going back to the Mystic Massacre. You're going all the way back in an uninterrupted string of massacres and scalp bounties and dislocations and reductions of population, liquidations as they called them in Europe, all the way back to an outfit called the Wappingers. Well, they didn't call themselves the Wappingers. But if you've heard of them at all, it would be by that name, because that's the European name, the name that Europeans put on them to record them in history. But they're not much talked about because what happened with them is not too convenient. And we don't like to talk about what's inconvenient in this country. In fact, we want to, I don't know, take people, tie them to a stake, burn them up for saying wrong things. Okay, you'd be accused of white bashing when you talk about what white people do. You'd be talking about being anti-American when you talk about the history of the United States. Knowing something about it is considered unpatriotic. Wappingers. Could probably actually find a name, but I've never encountered it and don't know anybody who knows. They're pretty much lost in the mist of history. And these are the guys, you all heard about them, I'm sure, in grade school. These silly Indians that sold Manhattan Island to the Dutch for a handful of beads and trinkets. Silly Indians. Manhattan Island. Tell you what, they said that was about $50 worth of beads and trinkets. We'll pay you about $50 billion to keep that monstrosity you've created on Manhattan Island. We want the land back, but not that. Okay? No, these are those very little Indians of Americana. Okay, so little Indians sold the island. No, they didn't. They rented the tip of the island to the Dutch for trading purposes because it was of mutual benefit. Trade had things like bladed weapons, iron pots, glass beads, trade cloth, things Indians didn't have. These are trading people. They had things the Dutch didn't have but coveted, beaver pelts, for example. But in order to engage in this commerce on any regular basis, the Dutch, who were from somewhere else, needed to have some place to set up, so the Indians rented them some land. The Dutch being, oh, you always mispronounce our name, so let me return the compliment and say of a very European persuasion, decided that since these are inferiors, they would simply pass off this rental agreement as a bill of sale. When the Indians objected, they solved the problem. The way they solved it was by rounding up the militia, sending them up the island to dispense with the Wappingers, which they did with remarkable efficiency, so efficient that they didn't believe that they would be believed when they came back. When they came back down to New Amsterdam, as they called it, they didn't believe that the townspeople would believe they'd actually done. Oh, yeah, sure. Now we'll have to deal with the Indians again next year. So, in order to document their achievement, they took the heads from the recognizable males, the ones that were prominent with whom people at New Amsterdam had dealt or who at least they'd seen. They took their heads and they produced them in town, said, yeah, we've vanquished the Wappingers. Basically, we've annihilated them, and here's the proof. And there was a joyous upsurge of sentiment among the populace. And they were so happy. They celebrated, and they celebrated by having themselves a sporting contest, a jolly little game of kickball, using the Indians' heads as the balls. And that little kickball contest happened at a location which is very nearly the foundation of the World Trade Center. Military-economic interlock as a matter of state has been the nature of this project we now call the United States since before the United States ever existed. Doing this to other people is the absolute bedrock fundamental requirement of what it is that becomes the United States. That whole process of what was done to Indians in terms of liquidation of population and divestiture of land and resources was the absolutely essential ingredient of placing the United States in a position to where it could project itself outward in the world in the same fashion it had projected itself inward to consolidate itself as a continental block country, a mega state, as it were. There's no distinction to be drawn in terms of form or motive between what it is that the United States is doing in Iraq today and about 30 other places on the planet, and what it's been doing throughout the 20th century abroad, and what it was that it had to do internal to the North American continent in order to create the capacity to do that. Inside, the outside are inextricably linked. It's a single, uninterrupted process. Now, all of those people from all of those massacres and all of those scalp bounties and all of those dislocations and dying of disease from smallpox infection that was deliberately induced in California, in the upper Missouri, in the Ohio River Valley, and elsewhere, they were all there. They were all there on 9-1-1. These were all unrequited deaths, actually even celebrated, because that's orthodox historiography. American historiography is ultimately triumphalist. It is the same kind of history you could expect a victorious Germany to have written about itself in the aftermath of the Second World War. Germany, however, was not as smart as the Nordic population of North America, as Hitler called y'all. It lost. That's the big difference. Germany lost. The Nordics here didn't. Other than that, well, we can parse differences all day long, but it's the commonalities which are actually ultimately at issue. And it doesn't end with the Indians. Those foundations of those buildings, the World Trade Center, sit roughly, as those of you who have been to New York probably know, roughly at the foot of something called Wall Street. Wall Street, which takes its name from the enclosure of the slave market, which gave rise to the New York economy. No. Slavery was not something restricted to the Deep South. It was in the North, too, and it was very profitable, the trade in human flesh, chattel laborers, livestock, in other words, drawn out of African civilizations. And so the U.S. portion of the transatlantic slave trade would also be at issue. Those people who died in the Middle Passage en route to North America, with the markets in New York and Charleston and elsewhere, those who were brought here too, because for their own civilizations, for their own cultures, their own societies, they were as good as dead. They weren't killed, and that's the big distinction that the exclusivists will tell you. Well, this wasn't really genocide because they weren't killing them. In fact, they had a vested interest in keeping them alive as much as possible because they were valuable and they wanted to work them. They needed the labor. Didn't matter back home. Once you're taken across an ocean and pressed into chattel slavery, never to return, you might as well be dead. The impact on your culture is the same. And then there's all those guys that didn't have a Chinaman's chance of surviving. You've heard that expression? That's another good bit of Americana. They haven't got a Chinaman's chance getting through that one, buddy. The reference there comes to the coolie labor that was expendable, imported into this country to lay track on the Transcontinental Railroad and to do the dangerous work in the deep shaft mines in California, in South Dakota, and elsewhere. You don't have a Chinaman's chance refers to their life expectancy. Nobody kept them alive or even tried to because they were of no value. They could be replaced so cheaply and so easily. Work them to death in a hurry and replace them with someone else. Oh, yeah, they were there, too. And all the, what is it they call them, wetbacks? Yeah, wetbacks getting across a river that this country that we're in imposed upon another country as it gobbled up the northern half of that other country. Oh, yeah, you're going to turn people into migrant laborers, virtual slave laborers, and so forth as an onus for crossing a river to get back home. And that's really what that comes down to. That whole mishmash, that whole nightmare, that all came to bear. Large boil, lanced, pus splatters.